Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer 89.5 KVRF presents Dog Talk Radio, hosted by Robert and Michelle Forto. On Dog Talk Radio, we do just that. Talk dogs. Everything from introducing a new puppy into your home to the health and welfare of your canine senior citizen and all points in between. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome everybody. This is Robert Forto and you're listening to Dog Talk Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our streaming site every Wednesday night, 7 p.m., which could change in the coming weeks, possibly a better time slot at 5 or 5:30 p.m. here in the Valley. That way you can listen to us on your drive home from work. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just search for Dog Works Radio. Keep the conversation alive. Ask your questions and comments, and we will be sure to answer them. And sitting beside me is the lead trainer of Alaska Dog Works and the co-host for Dog Talk Radio, Michelle Forto. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going quite well. So a new time slot.
A new time slot is in the works here at Radio Free Palmer on KVRF. That way people can listen to us as they drive home from Anchorage. They will hear our voice on the air on Wednesday evening. So I guess it's bigger and better things. I'm not sure.
I guess so. I guess we should have some valuable training tips. Hopefully those listeners will start calling in and asking us some questions as well.
They can. Once we do a live show, our call-in number is 907-745-8900. We look forward to hearing from you. We will make the announcement as soon as we have it set. We're just in the talking stages right now, but I look forward to having a little bit better time slot for our show, Dog Talk Radio. Be sure to listen to all of our past shows on dogworksradio.com. We have a library of about 275 episodes of our various dog-related radio shows. Michelle, what's going on the first Wednesday of fall?
You know, the first Wednesday of fall has been a spectacular day, starting off with some freezing rain, which makes it pretty gross to take your dog outside to do some training. So I think that we should talk about how do you move from the outdoor training with your dog in the summertime to indoor training with your dog in the fall.
We can talk about that. We also have two other topics that relate to lists. I know last week we had a very hot topic. We talked about the 10 most dangerous dogs. It's one of our most downloaded episodes of all time. We had 12,000 downloads of that episode, and we may even had a little bit of a play in them changing the list itself. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do, actually, and I'm glad to see that they changed the list, but I still would like to see their resource for how they came about with the list.
Well, you know, anything can be posted on the internet and anything can be anonymous, so I think they retracted a little bit on top10ofthecity.com where the original post was posted. So at least us and I'm sure quite a few others had an impact on the 10 most dangerous breeds. So you wanted to talk about transition from indoor to outdoor training.
Absolutely. You know, it's been really nice weather here in Alaska this past summer. Once summer got started, it was a little bit of a late start. And, you know, you were able to train your dog outside, take him hiking, biking, romping around the dog park, and so on and so forth. So now that the mud has returned and cooler temperatures are on the rise, what do you do with your dog to get him exercised? A few suggestions would be to take some of those outside games and training routines and modify them for inside your house. Same as you would allow your children to play ball in the house by rolling it on the floor, you can do the same thing with the dog. You can also leash your dog to you while you are working around the house, making dinner, vacuuming, dusting, cleaning, and so on and so forth, so that your dog gets used to those items in your house. You'd be surprised how much better of a reaction your dog will have once you fire up that vacuum cleaner and he's attached to you, the first few times he might be a little bit scared, but after a while, he'll understand that we are dancing with the vacuum cleaner.
There you go. So looking forward to your comments on how you transition from summer training to fall and winter training with your dog. Again, Facebook and Twitter at DogWorks Radio. So, Michelle, today we're going to talk about two lists in particular. The first one is six common signs your pet may be sick, and are you loving your pet to death? I think that's going to be a very interesting topic when we mention that here in a little while. But as you guys know, your dog is your most faithful companion. But with that, they cannot say, hey, I do not feel well. I have a tummy ache. I have a sore foot. Something is not going right inside. I have a headache, a toothache, etc. So communication and observation are key when you are trying to figure out what Fido is trying to tell you on a health front. Michelle, do you have anything to add to that before we get into this list?
You know, the best thing I can recommend to people is that a lot of times by the time that your dog has successfully communicated with you that something is wrong to the point that it's time to go to the vet.
Yes, and you know, we are a big proponent of veterinary care. We do a lot of our veterinary care on our own just by the simple fact of having 30 dogs, and the sheer number of dogs also equals a lot of trial and error and experience on our parts in being able to take care of a brood of sled dogs, but that is not a replacement for your vet.
Absolutely not. But, you know, it is something that I recommend on a regular basis as a trainer is go ahead and partake in a canine CPR class, first aid class. I know that it is something that you and I have taught in the past, but it's also something that is readily taught now through the Red Cross.
It is, and we also teach it at our business, and we aren't going to promote our business at all, but you can find out more about it
on
our Facebook page.
I would like to promote that everyone out there, if you have a dog, if you have two dogs, if you have five dogs, if you have 50 dogs, take a chance and learn about canine CPR and first aid. It can help you in situations where you can't get to the vet. We live in Willow, and there are situations where we can't get to the vet, and our fast thinking and first aid capabilities have put a dog that was at risk at ease until we could get it to the vet, and in some cases at ease enough that the vet signs off on it and says, good job, pats us on the back, and sends us on our way.
So here we go, the six signs that your dog is trying to tell you he or she is sick. Six signs that your dog is sick.
Ooh, what a tongue twister.
So with them, the first one, probably the most noticeable one, is problems eating. And just a little bit of a caveat here, just because your dog skips a meal or two does not necessarily mean he is sick. So don't rush off to the vet because he skips his evening meal. But there are some things to watch out for. If your dog approaches his food bowl as if to eat, but then stops or takes a bite, then drops it, or seems to be repelled from eating, he may be experiencing pain in his mouth, possibly from severe gum or dental disease, nausea, or a mastectomy, chewing muscle, mastectory, chewing problem in his mouth. So problems eating can become a major issue, but it does not necessarily mean that he has an upset stomach, does it?
No, it does not. Same as your dog eating grass does not necessarily mean he has an upset stomach. Same as a little bit on the other end, if he has soft stools, liquid stools, or diarrhea once or twice over a two-day period does not necessarily mean that they are very sick.
So number two on our list of the top six things that your dog is trying to tell you if he or she is sick. Number two, unquenchable thirst or constant urination. If your dog drinks water and or urinates excessively, he or she may be suffering from one of the three conditions, Cushing's disease, diabetes, or a urogenital related condition, kidney disease, bladder stones, bladder infection, or possibly even kidney failure.
That is correct. It can also signal something a little bit milder, such as a urinary tract infection, which female dogs are prone to as well as male dogs.
Number three on our list of the top six is weakness and or shivering. If your dog exhibits episodic weakness and or shivers, shakes as if he is cold, he or she may be suffering from Addison's disease, which is under secretion of the adrenal glands, resulting in insufficient levels of cortisol, making body temperature regulation difficult and contributes to muscle weakness and the inability to respond to stress.
That sounds like a big dangerous thing, but let's let people understand too. If a dog has recently been injured or has been very ill, has undergone surgery and certain types of vaccinations, they can exhibit these same types of signs of an inability to regulate body temperature. That is why anytime your dog has had a visit to the vet and undergone any sort of anesthesia or even mild surgeries, it is a good idea to make sure that they have the ability to keep warm for at least 24 hours post-veterinary care.
Number four on our six most common signs that your dog may be telling you he is sick: difficulty with transition from laying to standing. If your older dog has a tough time getting up or laying down, and this decline has been progressive over time, it may simply indicate arthritis or a progressive spine, disc, or muscle breakdown, which is treatable with natural glucosamine and chondroitin supplements, with alternative modalities like laser therapy and or acupuncture. In more severe cases, your veterinarian can prescribe other medication. If your dog has an acute onset of this difficulty, it is more likely to suggest an injury or an event in which a case history of activity and responses over the time can be critical in figuring out what it is.
I absolutely agree.
So, as we mentioned, it for the older dog, it's probably arthritis. It's probably, you know, just tired muscles. Old dogs, like old people, tend to get around a little bit more slow.
You know, and that is true, and they also have a tendency to be a little bit more injury prone as well.
They do. Number five on the six most common signs that your dog is telling you he or she is sick, poor grooming habits. If your dog or cat stops grooming, it may signal a sickness or a problem with the mouth. When a cat is sick, for example, one of the first signs of failure to maintain grooming habits is the sign of it being sick. You know, dogs don't necessarily do this as much as cats, but if they let themselves go, if their coat becomes less shiny, if they aren't taking care of themselves as if they have on a normal day, this could be a sign that they are fatigued or they don't feel well. Michelle?
You know, with Siberian Huskies, we both know that they are one of the best grooming dogs of all canines. They groom themselves quite well. Malamutes are right behind them. All of the Nordic breeds have a tendency to groom themselves quite well. Other breeds, not so much. They require human intervention to provide them with the grooming. So when you groom your dog on a regular basis, brushing them weekly, getting the nails trimmed, take the time to really look over their body, feel their body. If you feel any bumps or abrasions or notice that the dog twitched or pulled away from you at a certain spot on their body, they could have a sore muscle, they could have an injury, they could not be feeling well, they could simply just not want to be brushed as well.
That is right. And number six in our list of the most common signs that your dog is trying to tell you he or she is sick, it is dry heaving. If your dog makes multiple attempts to vomit but can only dry heave, if he appears sluggish or his stomach starts to appear distended, this could indicate gastric bloat and torsion, where the stomach twists on its own axis, a true emergency most likely to require immediate surgery. Now, with this, if anybody has been around dogs long enough, they know just because a dog throws up on an occasion, not very often, that is not a sure sign that they are sick. So, again, take this with a grain of caution, but it can turn into a very serious injury and or life-threatening condition if your dog is experiencing bloat, Michelle?
I agree 100%. And like I said, the best thing you can do is know your pet, watch for the signs that are abnormal to his normal daily activities, partake in a CPR first aid course for canines, and have your veterinarian available to you at any time.
So again, the six most common signs your pet may be sick. Number one, problem eating. Number two, unquenchable thirst or constant urination. Number three, weakness or shivering. Number four, difficulty with transition from lying to standing. Number five, poor grooming habits. And number six, dry heaving. And now we're going to get into another list, and I think you guys are going to be interested in that. It is the five ways you could be loving your pet to death. Michelle, what do you think about that topic? The five ways you could be telling yourself that you love your pet to death.
I don't know if I'd be telling myself I love my pet to death, but according to the list, there are some sure ways that we humans are overhumanizing our dogs and loving them too much.
So number one, probably the most common way that we could quote-unquote be loving our dogs to death. It is something that I am adamantly against. I know you are the same. I call it the Paris Hilton syndrome. It is where we never allow the dog's feet to touch the ground.
You know, absolutely. And that situation comes from a lot of the smaller breeds are held more against our clothes and our bodies, and they are in our beds and on our furniture. And a lot of people believe that if that's where the dog is going to be, that I don't want it to track into my bed or my home or on my body any parasites, dirt, mud, anything that most women would consider gross.
So how does this relate to loving them to death? Well, if you hold your dog all the time and do not allow his feet to touch the ground, that inhibits socialization, and that way they do not learn how to interact with others. So, for example, if that young dog or that older dog, for that matter, has been held its whole life, and then you put him down at the dog park, all of a sudden chaos ensues. He does not know how to defend himself. He is not socialized. Therefore, inevitably something could happen. I'm a little bit tongue-tied today.
That's okay. And, you know, it's not just putting them down at the dog park. If you simply take your dog on a walk and decide to put the dog down, chances are he's not going to know how to walk on the leash, let alone want to walk on the leash.
Number two, avoiding anesthesia. I think this is an important one, how we could love our dogs to death. And, of course, for folks that do go to the vet quite often, you know, one of the main things that occurs at a yearly visit is to have your dog's teeth cleaned. And with that, just about every veterinarian I know of, and I know it's a new fad these days, anesthesia-free teeth cleaning, it is a way to make sure that your dog stays healthy and lives a long life. So if your dog does not get routine dental care, routine dental maintenance, therefore he's going to shorten his life. Do you agree?
No, I do not agree. We had a vet a while ago before doggy dentistry became so popular that said that simply giving a dog a good hard bone once a month was suffice, and I still agree with that. I think that a lot of dogs, designer breeds, registered breeds, even mutts, are eating the wrong types of foods, and this condition causes them to have more tooth decay than they ever have in the past. We own 36 dogs, and I can tell you not one of them has been to the vet for a dental cleaning, including our house dog, Kane, who is our German Shepherd, who has been to the vet quite a few times, and not once has the vet said, oh, he needs to come in for a teeth cleaning.
So number three on the five ways you could be loving your dog to death, showing love with food. You know, I think this comes hand in hand with people as well. For folks that feel the need to show their companions, their family, that Thanksgiving dinner must be seven nights a week. I think that that is hurting our society, not only for people, but also for dogs as well. What do you think?
I think you did quite well not mentioning my father in that equation. Just recently, I was visiting my father, and his two little dogs are slightly overweight, but not obese. I was very proud of him. But yes, I do think that people have a tendency to love their dogs a little too much by offering them food and treats as often as they can. I know that we have a nightly ritual at our house, and one of our sled dogs that gets to stay in the house at night, his name is Bodie, he shares one or two Skittles with you every night at bedtime. But you are disciplined. You do keep it to one or two Skittles.
Yeah, we don't sit around and eat the whole bag. I think that we would both be on death's bed if we did that every night before bed.
Yes, I have to cut you off.
So number five in five ways we could be loving our pet to death is dreading the crate. This is probably one of the things that we hear most often when we speak to new pet owners about dog training. We always ask, do you use the crate? And most often it is...
No. That is for punishment, and I don't believe in it. That is the most number one statement that we hear about using crates. But let's back up before you finish this segment and let everybody know. If you live in Alaska, chances are you will travel outside of the state at one point in your dog's life where you will need to crate him on an airplane. Imagine the terrifying fear of being placed in a box and set on an airplane and you've never experienced either in your life. At least if you have crate trained since the time that that dog was a puppy or the time that you received that dog in a crate, you've made him comfortable, safe, and let him know that this is a place for just him, his own little bedroom.
So by dreading the crate, how does that show that we are loving our pets to death?
Does it mean that we are dreading the crate or the dog is dreading the crate?
Dreading using the crate, yes.
You know, I think that it goes back to humanizing the dogs a little bit too much. From carrying them around and never letting their feet touch the floor, to putting them in strollers, to dressing them, to not putting them in crates when it's appropriate. I think that it goes back to humanizing the dog. And in that aspect, we are setting ourselves up for failure in the relationship between human and canines.
And another way to do that is also by using the crate, you're avoiding a lot of excessive impulses, so impulse control. So for training aspects for this, you're able to utilize the crate and training mechanisms, therefore allow yourself and your dog to understand that sometimes there are limitations to what they can do. Therefore, it could help saving the dog's life.
Absolutely, but it can also enhance your relationship with your dog. For instance, you may have friends and family that come over, and having your dog interact with them may not be fun for your dog. It may not be fun for your guests. It may not be appropriate for your dog and your guests to interact. And therefore, instead of locking him in a bedroom, which he doesn't understand, placing him in his own bed, in his own bedroom, with a few of his favorite toys is like setting up a child with a video game when he's not around, supposed to be around listening to the adults talk.
So therefore, we have the five ways you could be loving your pet to death. They are, number one, never letting their feet touch the ground. Number two, avoiding anesthesia. Number three, showing love with food. Number four, we missed number four.
Well, I'm not reading the list.
Number four, I'm sorry, guys, we missed one. See, I told you I'm not on my game. Number four, probably one of the most important, is not taking your dog to the vet.
Right, and I understand that this is something new. A lot of people are into holistic veterinary care, and they refuse to take their dogs to traditional veterinarians. So they are now seeking out holistic care for their pets. These are also the people that will do holistic care for themselves, seeking out alternative medicines for their own health care. I don't have anything wrong with it. as long as what you're doing for your dog provides them with the best care possible. If you are in a position where this is the style of veterinary care that you choose, that is your prerogative. But at the same time, I would hope that each and every person would go to their financial pocketbook extent for their dog. And that we can save for another show. The cost of veterinary care and what would your limit be is a good topic for another show.
You know, way back in 2009, early 2010 or so, we're getting a little off topic here, but I think it's important that
we
bring...
skipped number four, so we're totally off topic.
Yeah, well, and we covered number five, which was avoiding the crate. We talked about how a healthcare system, this is way before Obamacare even came about, we talked about a healthcare system that should be modeled after veterinary care. And for folks listening, for years now, we'll probably remember this show way back when we were the Dog Doctor radio show. We talked about if we could have a healthcare system that was modeled after veterinary care, we would have the perfect world. Think about it, people. We go in to the vet and we say, okay, doc, do we need stitches? Yes, we do. How much is that going to cost? Well, it's going to be $75. Well, I only have $50 in my pocket. Can we make it work? Sure we can, but I'll give you the generic meds. Wouldn't that be great if we could do a human healthcare system like that of our vet? We can go and choose. We can figure out what the costs are, what treatments are available, what we're allowed to do at the house, what we're allowed to do ourselves, what medications we're able to provide, what types of medications and appliances that we could use, whether it be the bandages or whatnot. I think it would be a perfect world, and we could just skip Obamacare altogether.
Well, yes, I think that dogs and cats and most pets would vote against Obamacare anyhow. But I think that veterinary care has become a little bit more corporate since we did that show on that topic. And a lot of veterinarian hospitals aren't allowing you to make certain negotiations on if you get to choose generic medication or if you even get to forego pain medication or antibiotics. And just get the stitches and nothing else. But I know that back in the day, it was a little bit easier to get those choices made.
Well, we do have to give a shout-out to our veterinarian. We have just a couple of minutes, and she is one of these vets that allows you to make decisions for yourselves where it's not that corporate conglomerate where they have to meet the bottom line. She will tell you up front what's it going to be, how much it's going to cost, what the treatment scope is, and her name is Dr. Susan Dent, Wildwood Mobile Veterinary Clinic. Awesome vet. I know we've used her on several occasions with our dogs. What can you say about Dr. Dent? I know she's been on our show before.
You know, she is a great vet, and she is a little bit old school, meaning that if you have proven to her that you have experience with your animals, she's going to allow you to do a little bit more than somebody that does not have experience or the capability to handle it. There are situations where you, with sled dogs, I'm sure most people understand, they have accidents. They have injuries, and some injuries are well beyond first aid care, and we do need to take her and take dogs to see her. We had recently a dog get his ear nicked while out on a training run, and she and I decided that it wasn't worth putting the ear back together at the nice little point for this little Siberian mix. It was better to cut the little edge off, and a lot of people wouldn't have made that decision. Going back to loving the dog to death, if I had chosen to sew this piece back together where there wasn't enough material, so to speak, to put it back together, he would have succumbed to frostbite on that ear, which would have been much more painful and would have caused him a further injury in the future. So you have to be willing to make some tough decisions when it comes to your animals, same as with your children and your loved ones. There are times when it's gut-wrenching and crippling, the decisions that have to be made.
Give us an example with your child.
Well, in the same week that Beryl had his ear nicked, our daughter stuck her eye tooth or her canine tooth, if you will, through her lip and required about 16 stitches in her mouth and her cheek. And she's recovering well, but that was a decision that I wasn't too inclined to make. I didn't want her to have a bad scar on her lower lip and her cheek. But these are things that we live with, and I went with the doctor's recommendation, and she got the stitches. It's a week later. She's a lot better. She's doing just fine. So it goes hand in hand.
So today is all about lists, the 6 common signs your dog may be telling you he is sick, and the 5 ways that we could be loving our pets to death. We're interested in hearing what you guys have to say on these topics. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We are getting much more interaction on Twitter these days than we have in the past. I don't know if it's through just good shows or promotion of which, but at least we're getting interactions and talking. So I look forward to hearing your guys' comments and concerns, and especially head on over to our Facebook page at Dog Works Radio. Michelle, we are out of time. Actually, we are over time. So for folks who are listening to this live, missed that whole last minute. So we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.